Now entering Nerdist.com.
Big Pop Fun.
It's Big Pop Fun with Tom Wilson, the podcast gentle enough to use every day. But we do it once a week, so space it out if you can. I mean, yeah, you can listen to it over and over, but don't get all mental enough. Here's Tom.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Big Pop Fun. This is the 83rd one, and I can't believe it. I'm rounding the clubhouse turn, people. We're hanging in there, and we're bringing you another magical sleigh ride of enchantment and wonder as we click our horse. Well, we don't click our horses. We clicked our tongue. We do really. We click our teeth and our tongue. And the horses then respond, taking us on a magical and enchanting journey across the acres of our own hearts and minds and spirits as we all get together and say, wow, what, Tom can't find guests now or whatever? Well, I have been running, and I have not been able to sit down and speak with anyone. So this is another solo podcast, and I hope you enjoy it. For those of you who email and say, I love the solo ones, hang in there, and let's do one. And for you people who go, I hate the solo ones. Can you just talk to people? Well, this one's not for you, so farewell, adieu, and I wish you well. At someone else's podcast who's talking to someone. Hey, after those Scott Lewis conversations, I was moved by talking to Scott. If you didn't listen to those conversations with Scott Lewis, go back. What is that, number 80 or something? It's back there a little bit, Scott Lewis. People respond now to a lot of the old podcasts, and it really, hey, it makes me feel good in a way that they've liked so many of them, bad in the way that some of them haven't been great to them, but that's that day. That's the nature of podcasting, right? It's free. We just get on here and we listen to each other. I listen to you through postcards. My friend Steve sent me a postcard from Nebraska. Jean-Louis sent me another. I've got numbers of postcards and I appreciate them very much. You can write me a postcard at P.O. Box 18106, Encino, E-N-C-I-N-O, California, 91416. And I'm getting these postcards from people who are listening to the podcast. I got a moving postcard from someone who had listened to my discussions with my old friend Blake Clark, the historic comedian, and totally defensibly, an American hero and an American folk hero by both going to Vietnam, having harrowing experiences in Vietnam, and incredibly coming back to the United States to make them into very, very successful stand-up comedy, doing The Tonight Show and HBO specials and all kinds of things. If you haven't listened to the Blake Clark conversations, do that. But I got a very moving postcard from a friend who shall remain nameless, but who listened to my conversations with Blake, and it opened his heart to an uncle of his who had many experiences in Vietnam, but never talked about them and was very quiet about them. And I suppose the family was very respectful about that. But in an unusual way, in this modern technology of podcasting or whatever, just an honest conversation with Blake about his experiences helped open a guy's heart to his uncle's experiences, even though they're secret. So that meant a lot to me, and I'm glad of that. Blake Clark is one of the great, great series of conversations. Of course, people like the conversations with Mark Hamill. And for those of you who are kooky enough and stand-up comedy and movie buffs, the Steve Odekirk Marathon, you have to download those and check out my incredibly lengthy but really fun conversations with Steve Odekirk and his ideas on I think everything, huh? Stand-up comedy, movie making, entertainment, directing, because he's done it all. Thanks for coming back to another episode of Big Pop Fun. Did I mention I'm Tom Wilson? You're lovely and lovely host. I'm just lovely to the second power host. Thanks very much for being here. Thanks to Jeff Harlan for the announcements. Jeff Harlan's another podcast. You might check that one out. That was a conversation about a person who comes to Hollywood. Well, he was born and raised here, but comes to the, let's say, the entertainment industry and follows a path, which is what most people that I know have done. Follow the path that is somewhat in your control and somewhat not in your control. So Jeff ended up to be an actor with hundreds upon hundreds of television commercials, which are now on YouTube and everywhere. But Jeff is, a quote-unquote commercial actor, but he's got a very long resume in theater 40 in Beverly Hills, in many of these things. But just for whatever reason, he became a go-to guy for commercials and voiceovers, commercial voiceovers, like Wichita Falls cheese. When you want to find it, as I've talked about here, it sounds like I kind of have one of those announcers, but I don't, because those guys are way better at it than I am. And even with microphones, do you know those guys, they study how to use the microphone, where to position their head around the microphone so that it's absolutely correct. And they use consonants in different ways than you or I use consonants so that it just sounds somehow perfect. You see that perfect? That's the stuff they study, and I don't have time to study that stuff. So I'm not a voiceover guy. I do voiceovers and animation a lot, but then there's a director and they say, hey, could you do one that's quieter? And there are technical people who say, Tom, would you step back from my microphone like 7 feet? But my point is, thanks to Jeff Harlan for the announcing. let me get to my commercials. The Masked Man, my book, it's available on iPad and Kindle and the Nook. It's got all 5-star reviews. People are liking it. Both people that seem to have bought it. Thank you to both of you. It's an interesting story about Clayton Moore, the actor who played the Lone Ranger on the 50s television series. And I think you would enjoy the book. I hope you read it, and I hope you enjoy. You know, the interesting thing, the Lone Ranger just came out, of course. We know the big Johnny Depp movie called The Lone Ranger, where Johnny Depp doesn't actually play the Lone Ranger. The movie is not called Tonto, which is odd. The Lone Ranger is played by Armie Hammer. Yeah, I know, that's a name. But the Lone Ranger, I think, hasn't done particularly well. And that's a shame for the character, the Lone Ranger. But I think those guys have done well. I think they've done well. So they're not going to need any money for groceries or anything. Johnny Depp is going to go off and do, you know, another pirate thing or something with a lot of makeup. And Armie Hammer, I don't know whether he keeps the mask, takes it off, whatever he does, that's good. That's good. Johnny Depp in The Lone Ranger. I'm in The Heat. Hey, The Heat's been doing very well. The Heat's like $90-some million. If you haven't seen a funny movie this summer and you want to go see something funny and not where it's that, you know, post-apocalyptic world with robots eating us. I mean, how many... My goodness. Okay. I'm not going to be, you know, in my day, they had movies where people talked to it. No, but come on. I mean, it's like, are they using the same models of the robots now? I just go, yeah, it's the world is ending. And this time it's Matt Damon who's trying to save people. And the next one is Johnny Depp, but he's wearing an Indian outfit. But anyway, so go see The Heat. Because, hey, if I may say, my movie... And, I do a cameo in The Heat. Cameo is where people like myself make an excuse in order to make it sound like I meant for the part to be that small. But, you know, it's just a small part. It's a small part. I do a few jokes. Sandra Bullock was a great, very nice lady. Very nice. Very funny. Melissa McCarthy, of course, hot as a pistol. And doing magnificently well. I was trying to get her on the podcast, but it seems like she's really awfully busy. like some of the most really, really popular and famous people that I know and I've asked to be on. They're really busy, though they do give me a phone number, which is answered somewhere in northern Mexico. But Melissa McCarthy, hey, maybe she's going to be on it sometime. I have a number, and I've called it, and it hasn't worked out so far, but Melissa might be on. Melissa is fantastic and talented. Sandra and Melissa, together again for the first time, The Heat, and hey, can I call it my movie? My movie's beating The Lone Ranger. It's the first time and only time I'll get to say that, I guess. Yeah, I'm ahead of The Lone Ranger and ahead of whatever, my White House Down. I got to get on with this. Sorry. So buy my book, The Masked Man, and buy art. Let me get that commercial. Buy art. Wherever you are, go to an art show this summer and buy some art. And enjoy it. It's made by a person. I started in art. Hey, how about a commercial this time for you doing your own art? You making something. Isn't it time? Isn't it time to start printing those photographs or putting them together or putting them on a blog or painting around them? I mean, that's how I started. I had started when I was young going to art stores and just buying the stuff. Just trying to do it. That was a huge failure. I mean, my stuff, it looked like that stuff. It looked like the stick figures, and grass was like this ridiculous green, and then dirt was like this brown out of the tube, and I didn't know how to mix the colors and everything, and they looked horrible, so I quit. And then I did these abstract things because I thought, well, I can't draw and I can't mix the colors, so I'll just do the colors abstracty things. And that was okay, but ultimately not very satisfying and not very good. It wasn't very good. So, hey, what? I can't draw. I can't mix the... Photography. I started photographing a lot, and I do have many, many photographs of my time here in Los Angeles in the early 80s and everything, taking photographs, 35 millimeter, and developing myself and printing it myself in the darkroom and doing all that stuff. But really, that was so literal. It was so literal, as opposed to the figurative kind of the painting, colors, and things like that. It was just this hair. This is a picture. This is where I was in this room. And this is a picture of these people that I was with in this room. It was okay. And I enjoy a lot of that. I enjoy a lot of that photography when it's great. But I think it helped me compositionally, but no, it wasn't great. Then I took photographs, and I started making photo collages, and then I started painting on with color photographs in photocollage, gluing them to these Masonite boards. Then I would paint on top of the collages, and that felt really good. That felt kind of the mixture, the colors and the impasto, the painting on there and on top of the painting. And I was enjoying that, but the fact is I was just, for so many years, beating around the bush because I wanted to be a painter. So I finally decided, hey, I'll buy the equipment again, and I'll go to a class. Ooh, but I'm not an artist. I draw stick figures. I'm not good at it. Remember that dirt grass picture I did where the dirt was just brown right out of the tube and the grass was this weird green color? I can't do it. I decided I'm going to go, and I'll freely admit that I'll be the worst person there. And it was fine. It was fine. I went. I studied painting with a woman named Renee Amatai, who was a wonderful painter, a figurative painter, who teaches here in Los Angeles. Probably still teaches, I think. Haven't seen Renee in a while, but she's a wonderful. She shows in galleries in Los Angeles, and a wonderful painter. So I go to this class completely intimidated with my little paints that were in this instructions. You sign up for a class, and it goes, you know, art materials and buy these colors and buy these brushes and get these things and then come to the class. I show up at the class and I'm there with all old ladies. Nothing but old ladies there before Renee shows up. And I think, well, it's a bunch of old ladies painting flowers and a painting class. Well, I'm doing it anyway. I'm doing it anyway. I'm going to do it. I'm going to learn how to paint because I'm patient now. I know that that's what I want to do. I tried it. I tried photography. I tried collages. I tried that whole... No, I am going to paint. And if I'm surrounded with old ladies painting daisies, that's fine. I will paint the daisies in my own way. So it's all these old ladies. We're waiting for the instructor. And another great big dude walks in the room with all of his paints and everything. And he's talking like this, moving his thing. He's come, his back is to me, moves around. Well, who's this big dude? Another just big guy among the old ladies. Turns around, and it's Joe Don Baker, the actor. He starred in Walking Tall, Final Chapter. He played the Whammer, the Babe Ruth character in The Natural. He's been in a million things. Joe Don Baker is famous. Well, hey, more famous than me. Joe Don Baker? Great big hulking figure of a man? Comes, sets up near me, sets up his easel, looks at me like, hey, how are you? Okay, well, hello. So in my first painting class, I'm painting. It's Joe Don Baker and me, two really big dudes, and a bunch of old ladies painting daisies. And Renee Amatai walks into the class, and she's imperious, she's French, we see the accent, and is very she's a tough cookie. She's a tough cookie, and she takes out a wine bottle and a bowl and flowers, and we all start to paint them, and mine is of course embarrassingly bad, but it's mine. And she comes up. Maybe I've talked if I'm repeating this story and you guys have heard it and you're fast forwarding through this, that's cool. But if I haven't, you know, whatever, I've lost track of what I've told you and what I haven't. But Renee walks up and looks at my painting the first day I'm there, and she starts, yes, but that is not what it is. This is not what it looks like. This, and you know, I was just in, I don't know, I wasn't. I'm in a painting class with a bunch of old ladies, but I'm going to listen to what she says, but I'm not going to get pushed around by her, you know? Cause, yeah, it's just, no, homie, don't play that. So I say, well, yes, I think I have a lot of work to do, Renee, but it is my painting. It'll be, you know, my vision. It's going to be what I want it to be. So today, that's how my flowers are, and I'll develop, and maybe my flowers will be different the next time. Something like that, she says. She looked at me for 4 seconds and says, that is beautiful. And so from then on, she liked me. Thomas, she called me Thomas. Bravo, Thomas. And Jodan, look at this. Look at Jodan. That was Jodan Baker's name, Jodan, which sounds like a really good painter name, doesn't it? Jodan Baker. But that's, anyway, that's how I started. Jodan Baker, in fact, the star of Walking Tall, Final Chapter, I'll have you know, before they wrecked it with The Rock or whatever. Joe Don Baker was my introduction to like the professional art world and having your painting seen and professionally photographed and galleries. I mean, Joe Don was great to me. And he was very friendly. And I didn't know any of those kinds of things. We began together, as I said, and I was painting. And as things get better and you're starting to keep paintings and I wanted them to photograph or consider showing them at a little art show and everything, Joe Don comes to the class once because we had talked about it and I was asking him questions. And Joe Don had gone home and taken his Bic pen and some loose leaf paper, and Joe Don longhand wrote out all kinds of instructions to me. Here's where you go to have your paintings photographed in a professional way, in 35 millimeter slides or 4x5 medium format transparency. Here are a few places that have little art shows, little group shows that you can show. And Joe Don wrote all this stuff out on a few sheets of loose leaf, and it was such a nice thing. And he's such a wonderful guy. And I said, well, where do you show yours? And he told me this place and that. I go, Joe Don, do you sell your paintings or what do you do with them? Nope, I just give them away. I give them to my nephews or my nieces, or I just give them to people. So that was wonderfully inspiring to me. The Joe Don, out of the generosity of his heart, he was helping people. He was helping me in an art class, and he just painted for the joy of it. And at the end of every painting, he just gave it to somebody who could put it up in their house. So that's my idea. Hey, go to an art show and get something that you can just put up in your house, and that'll be a lot of fun and a wonderful conversation piece. Or become friends with Joe Don Baker and ask him for paintings, because apparently they're free. I am back from Peoria. I'm back from Peoria times two. There are probably more than that, but there are two towns that I've been in the past couple of weeks, Peoria, Illinois, and Peoria, Arizona, both about the same. The difference being temperature, but both about what one has cacti and heat, and one doesn't have that. Doesn't have cacti or heat. That's for sure. I went to Peoria, Arizona to watch my son play baseball. He's a baseball guy. I am not. I enjoy watching baseball. I've watched a whole heck of a lot of baseball in the last few years because he loves it and he plays it a lot. So you just end up in a folding chair watching a lot of baseball. And I've created a number of baseball rules after having watched my son play baseball for many years, and I'd like to share them with you right now. And they've been burnished in the 118 degree heat of Peoria, Arizona, at the Seattle Mariners, San Diego Padres facility. My gosh, they have these facilities in Arizona where they have 15 full-sized baseball fields, and you just go out and can somebody tell me where Padres Field 8 is? You know, it's 17 miles that way through the 118-degree heat. There are buzzards circling overhead as you're carrying your cooler and your folding chair. Anyway, the baseball rules is baseball rule number one. That low outside pitch that was a ball, that the ump just called a ball, was a strike 3 minutes ago when my son was at bat. Thank you. Rule two, it is not possible that opposing pitcher is in high school. I swear I saw him drive here with two kids and a common-law wife. That kid is 27 years old. Look at the beard. Baseball rule number three, though I was never good at baseball myself and got cut from the team before ninth grade, how could that kid at third base miss that thing? Come on, kid, we're losing. Baseball rule number four, the umpire is blind. Literally. He simply must be. Seriously. Get him a German Shepherd. Blind. Baseball rule number five, my son is never out per se. He is only called out by his inferiors, who resent his talent and his father's undeniable sex appeal. Baseball rule six, the companies who charge over $200 for a kid's bat will all drown in shallow water and be cast into hell by a just God. And baseball rule seven, my last one, uniforms are expensive, so dad's old leather belt and an STP trucker hat actually counts as an acceptable uniform. The end. Baseball, it's hot in Arizona. That's a dry heat, so you hardly feel it. As your bones are being baked, and oh my gosh, what dry heat. I mean, you spit in the air there. It evaporates. You cover that windshield with soapy water. You're trying to clean your windshield. Get water all over it. Turn it over. It's just ridiculous. So I went from there, Peoria, Arizona. I went directly to Peoria, Illinois, in the Jukebox Comedy Club. Thank you, everybody in Peoria, for coming out. Both of you, thank you. I appreciate it very much. The Jukebox Comedy Club is out in the outskirts of Peoria with a lot of clubs. I forget the name of the road, but it's a road, I think, where that dude, who's that dude in Roadhouse? That guy, Dirty Dancing. I'm terrible, man. I don't know anybody. The guy, Patrick Swayze. It's like, yeah, the Jukebox Comedy Club is out on a road where Patrick Swayze is a bouncer. Okay, so I don't, but you know, we had fun, we had good shows, and thank you to everyone for coming out to Peoria. If you've survived in the podcast this long and you're in Denver, I'm in Denver this weekend at the Denver Improv. So come out and see me at the Denver Improv this weekend. And thank you to the people of the Jukebox Comedy Club. And so far, hey, thanks podcast listeners for coming out to a show. So far, So far, I've asked many times, hey, come out to the show and tell me if you listen. And over the span of a couple of years, three people have. So I appreciate that very much. You know, when I was first in California, I was ready, like every young kid, I was ready to own this place. I was ready to just get on a TV show and be a superstar and just wait till they see me. And as I've told you on the podcast, I got a job as a bouncer at the Comedy Store and worked there as a comedian and was trying to get jobs on television and in commercials and wasn't getting very many. But I got an audition. I got an audition for Happy Days. Happy Days. It was like the biggest show on TV. Happy Days, of course. Happy Days. They spun off Laverne and Shirley from Happy Days. They did a few spinoffs from Happy Days. Mork and Mindy was a spinoff from Happy Days. So I knew I'm going to be on Happy Days. They're going to spin me off. I'm going to be a star. So I show up, of course, my first big audition to a big TV show. Sorry about that. Hit the microphone. See, I'm not good at microphone usage. Show up at the Happy Days audition, and there are 30 guys who look exactly like me in there, and all of them are reading as well. Like, wow, there are a lot of actors in this town, I'll tell you. And I go in, and Bobby Hoffman at the time was the casting director for Happy Days, and it was on the Paramount lot, and I'm there near it. I was near the stage where they were shooting Happy Days, and Happy Days was going on. I was looking for the stars of Happy Days coming in and out of doors. I didn't see anyone. I told you in here, I saw the MASH stages and Alan Alda talking with people when I was a kid. I thought, oh, that's the most unbelievably cool thing I've ever seen. Alan Alda. So I was looking for the Happy Days people. Didn't see anybody in Happy Days, but went into the audition with Bobby Hoffman, who was a nice guy. Nice guy. And I did my audition. He laughed during the audition. I thought, yes, I'm going to be in. And he laughed as I finished, and I thought, it's time for the spinoff because I'm going to be on Happy Days. And Bobby Hoffman, the casting director of Happy Days, said, oh, that was terrific. Great job. You're very funny. Very funny. I mean, I can't use you, but very, very good job, man. That was really, really good. I'm sorry, what? Yeah, before, what did you say? He says, I can't use you. My star of the show is like 5'7". I mean, you know, I could use you if you're wearing some Godzilla costume, or you know, you're just way bigger than everyone on the show. It's just not going to work. But thanks for coming in. I mean, maybe in another show, something or other. But thanks. Very funny, very funny. Good for you. Good for you. And that was my introduction to Hollywood. My knowledge that I would never be on an episode of Happy Days. It only took me 30 years. But they called me back to stage 19. To stage 19, the very stage on which they shot Happy Days, the very offices in which I auditioned for Bobby Hoffman, they called. I didn't even have to audition for this one. They called me just to offer me the role on See Dad Run. Wait, you know how I do. On a very special See Dad Run. It's a Nickelodeon show. It's on Nickelodeon, a sitcom. Starring Scott Baio. Yes, from Happy Days. I don't know if Scott Baio was on Happy Days by the time when I auditioned for it. He had become Chachi, but and a spinoff. He did Joni Loves Chachi. He got a spinoff, but not Tom because of Tom's physical size. So I did this episode of See Dad Run with Scott Baio on stage 19 at the Paramount lot. And I'll tell you, I enjoyed it very much. I'm not a guy who asks when they're airing. You know, when will this be on? When can my family TiVo this? So I'm on a very special See Dad Run on Nickelodeon very soon. And along with Well, Gary Marshall did the next episode. Gary Marshall was the, I think, the director, producer of Happy Days as well. So they were working together again, Scott Baio and those guys. Scott Baio, very nice guy, very welcoming. We had fun. And 30 years later, after my first audition, that Happy Days audition, and the sun is setting, there is a, at stage 19 at Paramount, it's a street where you look up the street and you see the Hollywood sign. And it's perfect because the sun is setting on the Hollywood sign. And Scott Baio and I are standing outside stage 19 and we're swapping old Hollywood stories. And he's telling me about stage 19 and shooting Happy Days on that. And I'm telling him about my much, much less illustrious stories, but you know, old Hollywood stories nonetheless. As the sun set on the Hollywood sign at stage 19 in Hollywood, and the groups of tourists, the tour guides leading people around the Paramount lot were walking right by us to look at pictures on the wall. I've always found that. At Universal Studios, they have tours. At Paramount Studios, they have tours. And their golf carts or the people are walking in large groups. And I mean, you could be standing there with George Clooney and, well, George, I was once there, I'm saying George Clooney because I was once on that lot, and George Clooney, he was on a TV show, right? And I won't know it, so forget it. He was on a TV show. He was playing pickup basketball with a bunch of guys who were all stars of the show. And the little group of tourists walked right by them to look up at the stage numbers and everything. And they have pictures of historic things. And the tourists are taking pictures of the pictures and missing the fact that they're passing George Clooney playing pickup basketball right in front of them. So, hey, if you're on the tours in Hollywood, make sure you look around a little bit because that I've seen it happen. I've seen the tourists walk right by Eddie Murphy, George Clooney, as I said, and certainly Scott Baio and your humble servant, international superstar, Tom Wilson.
Hello, everyone. This is Edward Snowden, tech wizard extraordinaire. When I'm not searching the gift shops of the Moscow airport over and over and over and over, trying to be admitted into Ecuador, man, have I made a mistake. I really screwed things up with that NSA. Yes, they're spying on everyone, but I don't want to live in Ecuador. But when I'm not trying to be admitted to as a citizen of Ecuador or looking at the gift shop at the Moscow airport where I currently reside, I'm listening to Big Pop Fun, the podcast with Tom Wilson. Gee, I hope he plays an obscure song.
Celebrity voice impersonated.
Time for another unusual song by Tom. Yeah, this is another gift to you. You think that a song about a bunny rabbit who likes onomatopoeia is unusual? They say write what you know and things that I come up with, I don't know what's going on in the fun factory between my ears, but this is one of them. This is, it's a song that I wrote that I come up with. And as I said last week, look, I'm the king of the not quite clever, but okay song that I play for people in nightclubs twice. I give it two shots. I'm stared at quizzically by people saying, I thought this was stand-up comedy. What are you? Are you a mediocre folk singer writing completely unfunny songs? No, sir, I'm not. So I think I'll dump this and go back to the old stand-up funny stuff. But this is actually not one of those that I've tried. I'm not trying this. This is a non-starter. So I just want to share it with you because, hey, you'll have a recording of it. And it'll be like the William Shatner, that album that he spoke the lyrics to Rocket Man. So it'll be like one of those things. You just make fun of me or just say, play it for friends. And you know who this guy is? Yeah, he's the guy that used to paint standing next to Joe Don Baker. The rhythms of the rhymes wrote poets long ago. so mindful of their lines that they counted beats just so. And bards like William Shakespeare's spoken couplets stay alive. Iambic pentameter challenges amateurs writing a song in fives. Oh, here we go. You wore your pretty party dress that day, with ribbons in your hair that flew away. You blushed a bit at my enchanted gaze in iambic pentameter. Yeah, what'd I tell you? We paddled in my little red canoe. While feeding baby ducks, I sang to you and stole a kiss or maybe even two in iambic pentameter. Shakespeare wrote his sonnets and his verse. I can't compete, I'll do a whole lot worse. Well, my tongue is tied, I try to just converse. I'm revolving in a spinning universe. Bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum. A one and two and three and four and five. Each finger touches you, I come alive. I'm dizzy when I look into your eyes in iambic pentameter. Here's another bridge even. Pentamically I am besides a while. The rhyming rhythms maybe make you smile. Just take my arm, I'll take you out in style. Till I grab you close and walk you down the aisle. Ooh, I love you more than words can ever say. I try to speak, but I can't find a way. So I'll sing my little song for you today in iambic pentameter. And we bid goodbye to that little song. Tom will never sing it again. It'll never be heard by human beings, except probably by the listeners of Big Pop Fun the podcast. Both of them. Unless I'm about 72 years old at a convention somewhere signing pictures of myself, I'll carry a little guitar around so the kids can come up and say, "Hey, old dude in those movies no one's ever heard of anymore, play that iambic pentameter song again for us, would you?" And I'll say, "I don't think so, kids."
Nerdist.com